You cannot possibly be attuned to Western culture today without coming into contact with gender theory. You'll even, shockingly, find children's books about it in your local library. Holding the view that sex is between the legs, but gender is between the ears, some people believe it is possible for one to state not only that biological sex and gender identity can match each other, which those who ascribe to such a view of sex and gender call being cis or cisgender, but also that they can be at odds. For example, they would hold that I can be a man on the outside, but really a woman on the inside, which, in general, they call being trans or transgender, though they would say there are a number of different genders on a so-called gender spectrum. The proponents of these ideas might encourage me to take steps, some irreversible, to change the way I present myself or even change my body through drugs or surgeries so my body matches my feelings. And they even push for laws to be passed to allow minors to seek what they call gender-affirming care, but others call child mutilation, without their parents' knowledge. But is it really possible to be a man on the outside and a woman on the inside? Are there really many genders on a spectrum? And does such a view of the human person even hold up under closer scrutiny? Finally, can a Catholic ascribe to such a view? I'm Dr. David Heiduck, and here's my take.
Magnificat has changed the daily prayer life of millions of Catholics worldwide. Each monthly pocket-sized issue includes prayers for morning and evening, daily Mass prayers and readings, meditations, saints' lives, essays, and more. Magnificat helps you pray the way the Church prays. Email offers at magnificat.com to request a free copy. Visit Magnificat online by clicking the link above or below in the description, or download the app and receive a month for free. Explore Magnificat and give your prayer life the beauty it deserves. Are you looking for a comfortable brown scapular that won't break? Check out our sponsor, Scapulars.com. They use American-made paracord, so it's super strong. And they also use Australian merino wool, so it's super comfortable. It feels like you're getting a warm hug from your heavenly mother. Click on the link above or below in the description and get yourself the most durable, comfortable scapulars in the world.
And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to this podcast and give us a 5-star rating. Before I get to what the Church teaches on this topic, I want to give a brief overview of where gender theory comes from. In its root, the word gender means the way in which one generates. Before the mid-20th century, the word gender was a grammatical term. Words had genders. These designations certainly were connected to masculinity and femininity. For example, terra in Latin means earth. Seeds are planted in the earth, and then life springs up from it. So you can see why the word was feminine. Since around the 1300s, the word sex referred to male-female differences in living beings, and then eventually to sexual intercourse itself. On a form, when you were asked what your sex was, it was either male or female. In 1955, we see the phrase gender roles for the first time, coined by the famed psychologist and now known sexual abuser, John Money. He called gender something private to the individual, and gender role as its public expression to others. Though his conclusions were and are contested, and his work generally controversial, ethically suspect, and even deadly, he hailed his research as a success, went on tour promoting it, and it made its way into textbooks. His terminology proved useful to further the aims of the sexual revolution, seeming to give scientific support to the claims of its proponents. In time, society at large began to adopt the terminology. But Money's ideas didn't arise in a vacuum. He was influenced by early 20th century so-called sexologists like Magnus Hirschfeld, Harry Benjamin, and Alfred Kinsey, all of whose research we now know to have been deeply flawed and, in some cases, even morally repugnant. John Money was part of Benjamin's team to establish an American sex change program. But there was a philosophical revolution underneath this pseudoscientific movement about sex and gender. I don't have time in this podcast to trace the intellectual history that led up to the sexual revolution that the work of Hirschfeld, Benjamin, Kinsey, and Money was used to validate. We could spend hours discussing folks like Sigmund Freud, Karl Marx, Friedrich Nietzsche, Wilhelm Reich, Herbert Marcuse, Simone de Beauvoir, Kate Millett, Michel Foucault, Shulamith Firestone, and Judith Butler, just to name a few. Instead, I will give a summary of their ideas, which, you will realize, are really philosophical and not scientific. 1. There are no natures or essences of things, including no human nature or sexual nature. So what it means to be a human being, or what the purpose of sex is changeable and subjective. 2. So, gender is not biological or fixed. It is merely a social construction. Sexual identity is constantly changing and shaped by social norms. 3. Because gender and sex are distinct, simply put, gender is what you feel or how you understand yourself, whereas sex is your biology, it does not follow that being a given sex means being a given gender. 4. Thus, woman need not be the cultural construction of the female body, and man need not interpret male bodies. If gender is not tied to sex, then gender is a kind of action that can potentially proliferate beyond the binary limits imposed by the apparent binary of sex. Gender is primarily performative. 5. What is considered to be natural or perverse sexual behaviors are social constructions, not biological facts, and are deeply tied not to ontology, that is, to the kind of being something is, but rather to the exercise of power. Power operates through the creation of discourses, categories, and norms surrounding sexuality. Sexual practices that challenge dominant power structures are often pathologized or criminalized. Power dissimulates ontology. 6. Just as the end goal of the socialist communist revolution was not only the elimination of the economic class privilege, but of the economic class distinction itself, so the end goal of the feminist revolution must be, unlike that of the first feminist movement, not just the elimination of male privilege, but of the sex distinction itself. Genital differences between human beings would no longer matter culturally. And 7, the natural family, that is, father, mother, children, is not natural or normative at all, but is the Bourgeois family, established by power structures and not ontology. To overthrow the family thus conceived is a key step to overthrowing these allegedly unjust power structures, and so sexual liberation is necessary to political liberation. Well, there you have it. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? If you are paying any attention culturally at all, and see which activist groups have joined forces. It is interesting to note that scholars who have studied the development of the modern concept of selfhood have shown that ours is a time characterized by what could be called psychological man and expressive individualism. We prioritize our ideas, feelings, and intuitions in the search for who we are and the purpose of our lives. In fact, we see what we feel on the inside as being so decisive for who we are that if we do not publicly express our inner truth, then we feel as if we're living an inauthentic existence. But the questions remain. Are we what we feel? Are we only whatever we think we are on the inside? Or does being human mean something beyond what we feel? Doesn't what we are on the outside, our body, have something to do with our identity? Instead of looking to the body for our identity, we who are living in this age of psychological man and expressive individualism just look inside. Today, some try to change their bodies to match their feelings. But why is it the body and not the inside that's mistaken? Why should we change our bodies to match our feelings and not the other way around? Why bring all of this up? Because the question of whether or not a person can be born in the wrong body, of whether a biological male can really be a woman on the inside, means accepting certain philosophical positions about sex, gender, and really about what it means to be a human being itself. It fundamentally assumes that we are not our bodies, but really are our feelings or consciousness. It assumes that there is no nature or essence of sex, gender, or a human being, but that all of these things are socially constructed, fluid, and used as a means of playing sexual politics and exercising power. In other words, those who promote gender theory beg the question. They assume what they in fact need to prove. But what is the church's view about sex, gender, and the human person? And upon what is it based? Well, before I unpack that, let's hear more about our sponsor for this episode.
The Brown Scapular is a special Catholic devotional. Invest in a scapular that is as strong as your devotion. At scapulars.com, they use super strong American-made paracord because your scapular should be as strong as your devotion. They also use the finest Australian merino wool that feels like a warm hug from your heavenly mother. You'll also find handmade rosaries with our distinctive deliverance cross, Italian-made saint medals, keychains, and jewelry. Visit the link above or below in the description to get yourself one of the most durable, comfortable scapulars in the world. Magnificat has changed the daily prayer life of millions of Catholics worldwide. Each monthly pocket-sized issue includes prayers for morning and evening, daily Mass prayers and readings, meditations, saints' lives, essays, and more. Magnificat helps you pray the way the Church prays. Email offers at magnificat.com to request a free copy. Visit Magnificat online by clicking the link above or below in the description, or download the app and receive a month for free. Explore Magnificat and give your prayer life the beauty it deserves.
So, looking at what God has made known, both in the natural law as well as what he has revealed in scripture and tradition, as it has been constantly interpreted by the magisterium, what do we find about the nature of sex, gender, and the human person? God creates everything for a purpose and with an end. The world is rationally ordered, intelligible, and imbued with meaning. Human beings are created in the image and likeness of God. We are persons made for love, that is, for truth and freedom, and for communion, for the sincere gift of self. When God created us as persons made in his image and likeness, he created us both body and soul. We are body-soul composites, not more one than the other. As a result, our bodies are us. The body makes visible what is invisible, the spiritual and divine. The human body shares in the image of God and reveals a person made in that image. When God created us as body persons, made in his image and likeness, he created us male and female. Our sex is intrinsic to us, and it is the body that identifies us as male or female. The human couple is an image of the Trinity. There is an original complementarity and unity between man and woman. The human body has a unitive and procreative meaning. Its unitive meaning can also be called spousal, because the body has the capacity to express the kind of love in which a person becomes a gift. The bodies of men and women are unintelligible without reference to the other. They are made to unite together. Thus, sexual union expresses the total gift of self, the communion of life and love. Sex doesn't so much express love as it expresses marriage. But this unitive act between a man and a woman is ordered to the procreation and education of children, hence the procreative meaning of the body. Now, original sin causes alienation from God, others, the world, and our true selves. It inflicts a primordial wound. The original order is disordered. What was whole is now broken. One impact is a rift in the original unity of man and woman, and a distortion of masculinity and femininity. Another is the inability to view the body personally. Another is turning others into objects of use and appropriation. Concupiscence, that is, the inclination to sin, dominates us. All creation suffers a wound, not simply human nature. Original sin is actually the cause of our fallen world, as well as sickness, disease, disorder, and death. So, in summary, God has revealed that we are created male and female, and that our bodies are what identify us. To say something else would be to deny the unity of the body and soul. It would make the real you what is on the inside and reduce the body to just pure matter. Also, in God's plan, the man and woman are made for one another and are ordered to one another. This is why any attraction to someone of the same sex is a disordered attraction. It's not the way we were supposed to be ordered, but is something out of order. This is similarly the case when someone feels as if they are, for example, a woman trapped in a man's body. Given what I have said about what God has revealed, this can never be the case. The reality is that a so-called transgender person is really a person with gender dysphoria. Such an experience is not what God originally intended for us, but is a consequence of life in a fallen world. It is a situation deserving of genuine compassion and care, but not the kind of care that the likes of Hirschfeld, Benjamin, Money, and their followers today advocate. While being incredibly compassionate and welcoming to those struggling with these challenges, Pope Francis himself has consistently spoken out about the dangers of gender theory. He is not wrong, for not only does it seek to erase differences, it attacks creation itself as God made it and seeks to establish a kind of anti-creation. Well, that's my take. If you have a topic you'd like my take on, comment below or send an email to r4hpodcast@gmail.com. Come back next time when we will tackle a new issue. Until then, run the race, fight the good fight, and keep the faith.